Good morning, everybody, and welcome from my side to this analyst call in the course of our full year results 2017. It's a pleasure to have you all on the phone. We do it as we do it usually. We would like to give you a first overview of the results, a quick one, and then have enough time to discuss results. With me is Gert De Winter, CEO, Carsten Stolz, CFO, and Matthias Henny, CIO, who will gladly take up your questions. I would now like to hand over to Gert.
Thank you, Marc. Everybody, also a very good morning from my side. In order to have the required time for questions and answers, I will be very brief on and actually present our results in a nutshell. One, we are very pleased, of course, with the 2017 results. We have achieved the second highest result in the last decade. We are growing strongly in our target segments, so clearly almost 3% in non-life and in the modern life products with over 14%. We have achieved a very healthy margin in our improving life business and actually confirmed a very high level of profitability in our non-life business. We're only 1 year down the road in our new Simply Safe strategy, and in the meantime, the three targets we have put forward, being one of the best employers, reaching 2 billion of cash into the holding and acquiring 1 million additional clients. We are well on track with over 400 million of cash, with almost 120,000 new customers and in the top 25 of the best employers. We have a strong balance sheet. As said, we have been able to generate over 400 million cash, and that is why we propose to the general assembly end of April to increase our dividend substantially up to 5.60 francs. That's, I would say, the highlights of the results in a nutshell, and I would be glad to open up for questions and answers.
Our first question comes from Mr. Peter Eliot from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Three questions, please. The first one was on the cash that you mentioned. I was wondering if you could just talk through the drivers of that higher remittance ratio, whether there's any one-offs there at all. Because I guess when I look at your cash radar, you've got headroom under all of the sort of four metrics that you show there. So I'm just wondering if you could perhaps mention the constraints there going forward. Secondly, you've disclosed a very strong solvency ratio. I guess, you know, we've all seen your chart in previous investor days and stuff, where you've shown the sort of the volatility. So I was wondering perhaps if you could also just mention how volatile that ratio has been over the last 12 months, or whether, you know, you now feel like you're in a much more comfortable position. And then finally, just on the life result, if I compare slides 23 and 24 with the equivalent ones from the half year presentation, it looks like you've done virtually no reserving in H2, but you've still strengthened the reserves, and brought them down by an additional 5 basis points in the second half of the year. I was wondering if you could just explain what was happening there. Thank you very much.
Right. Thanks for your questions. So with regard to your first questions, and I'll talk to slide 9, if you want to have this in front of you. The strong cash remittance that we have seen in 2017, as you see on the left-hand side, is based on a continued strong cash remittance from the non-life business. It has been strong in the last few years and was always the main contributor to cash remittance to the holding prior to setting this new target. And you see that this holds true also for 2017. We have seen a much stronger cash remittance coming from the life segment, and that is due to several factors. One is the increased profitability of the segment as such. You've seen that the EBIT on the life segment has picked up by 35%. So the profitability of the underlying life segment has gone up. The second element that plays a role here is that in line with the development of the solvency position, the increased solvency position on a group level comprising all business segments also holds true for the life segment, and therefore giving us more leeway to actively manage the capital position on life. So those are the two main drivers that enabled us from a group perspective to remit more cash coming out of the life segment. Now, with regard to your second question on solvency, I would like to draw your attention to hold on to the slide 11. That is exactly the same slide that we've shown in half year. We have now indicated that at midpoint we have a solvency position of well beyond 200%. And if you look at the lower left-hand side of the mosaic here, that even under stress conditions, we remain well above our internal risk buffer threshold of 140. So the solvency position has been and continues to be in a very strong position. Still, as you know, there is some discussions around models, especially in Switzerland, going on. So so some volatility might come from there, but we are very confident on this level. And as you've seen in the cash radar, the solvency part of the equation is not a constraint. Your third question with regard to life, indeed we have had less reserving needs in the life book in comparison to last year, most of which has already been done in the first half. So your observation is in that context correct. What we had to do is mainly to add some reserves due to the regulation in Germany of the so-called Zinszusatzreserve. I don't know exactly the exact English translation, but it's interest rates and an additional reserving need due to German regulation because of the interest rate level. And this development, as you've seen this on page 23, mainly also was one of the key contributors to the improved life contribution from an EBIT perspective.
Okay. Could I just follow up quickly on the first question on the life division in particular? It sounds like you're guiding to stronger earnings going forward. In the past, you've sort of said more than 200 million. Is it fair to say that you're now more positive than that? That you're kind of perhaps increased a little bit. And sorry, very nerdy, but just looking at the embedded value report, it looks like the life division there only reported a paying a 28 million dividend. So I was just wondering what the difference was. Thank you.
All right. So with regard to the 200 million, that guidance has been made in an environment that was different to where we are now. So I wouldn't put too much emphasis on this lower level threshold guidance that has been given in the context of the Investor Day. The interest rate environment has started to be a little bit more positive. In general, our positioning with regard to interest rates has been and continues to be a positioning for rising interest rates. I remind you that we are running with an asset and liability mismatch of between 1 and 2 years, which is favorable if interest rates on a continued basis would rise, and that would then obviously contribute to higher underlying life earnings. And so with regards to the to your second question on the embedded value report, I think I have to look this one up, and I would suggest that that we pick this up between you and the IR team later on, if that's fine for you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you very much.
Good.
Our next question comes from Daniel Bischoff, Baader Helvea. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. A couple of questions also from my side. First on Germany. Could you explain a bit more in detail which conclusion you have drawn from the claims review in Germany? Are there any specific elements to mention? Is it again the industrial lines business? And also, how do you look at the 96% to 98% combined ratio target, which should be achieved in 1 or 2 years? And then a couple of things on the life side. So first, I'd be interested to understand the drivers behind the significant improvement in the new business margin in Belgium. And then on the risk result side, I think in the past you mentioned that a good proxy is the 240 million profit. Is that still a valid number? I've seen that you had a negative one off in 2017. And then just a last point, on Friday, he will be keen to hear more about the progress. I mean, a number of customers in year one was around 15,000, you mentioned that. But I mean, it's the first renewals round. I mean, what were your main takeaways from this? And also, how cheap or expensive was it to get these customers, I mean, from a marketing point of view? These are my questions. Thanks.
Good. Let me first pick up the question on Germany. So what we have seen in the second half, and especially November and December, is that we have had a number of large claims in a part of the portfolio that we are completely re-underwriting. So it's in it's a liability portfolio. Beginning of 2017, we already actually cancelled the majority of these contracts. And without these bigger claims in this liability portfolio, the combined ratio in Germany would have been below 100. At the Investors Day, we have announced our 5-year strategy to take Germany back into profit, and of course we stick to that, and we are clearly progressing as we have changed substantially the content or the portfolio, the non-life portfolio, away from the industrial risks, down by approximately 25%. And a growth in the retail business in non-life by almost 20% over the last 2 years. So we are progressing, and with regard to the 96-98 combined ratio, we are very convinced that we will reach this in the middle term. I would leave the questions on life for Carsten, perhaps.
Yes. Thank you. So your first question was on the drivers of the improvement of the new business margin in Belgium. And there were a couple of drivers behind that. The first one was that we have provided lower guarantees in the new business in line with the underwriting strategy for life business in general. Secondly, there have been operational improvements in the Belgium operations. And thirdly, the business was operating in an environment with slightly increased interest rates. So these three drivers were the main contributor to the improved new business margin in Belgium. And your second question on the life part was your question of the risk result. The risk result has benefited in 2016 from positive one-offs. There has been one negative one-off in 2017. So for the time being, we stick to the guidance that the risk result shall lay somewhere between 200 and 250 million, as we said before.
Maybe I should then pick up the question on Friday. As you said, we have announced that we have won or acquired over 15,000 new customers in 2017 with Friday. The changing season the car changing season in Germany is always the period October, November, December. So the heat will come up by the end of this year. We are still continuing to win on a monthly basis new customers at the rate we were expecting. In terms of how do we acquire these customers, it's you could say it's a mixed of, on one side, it's almost half of it is direct, that goes by the direct channel, online, mobile, and so forth. The other half comes via partners and one bigger aggregator, Verivox. The marketing costs that we have planned in 2016 are slightly, the actuals are slightly below what we have what we had planned for. So it's completely in line with the plan.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question comes from Johnny Irwin, UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. Just three from me. So firstly, just on the cash remittances, I remember from the investor days that you guys mentioned the 2 billion Swiss franc cash remittance target would most likely be delivered a bit back-end loaded. But this doesn't seem to be the case, actually. You're tracking in line already. So does this mean that you're getting up more cash from perhaps the life unit and also from Germany than you expected at this stage? That's the first question. Secondly, on Germany, so obviously, you know, these liability issues have recurred. You cancelled a lot of policies in 2017. I believe there are some more to be cancelled in 2018. Do you think we'll see an end to these German issues in 2018? Are we closer to the turnaround being achieved? And finally, on M&A, can you give us an update on markets and lines that you'd be interested in bolstering? I know you were reported to be interested in Generali Belgium units, but that seems to have gone quiet. And just in terms of financial capacity for M&A, I remember you issued the hybrid in 2017, so I guess you've got capacity if something interesting comes along. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll answer your question on cash remittance. We are very happy with what we have achieved in 2017. To be honest, it's also a reward of many things that you cannot see from the outside. We have worked internally a lot on steering and managing the fungible parts of capital in an active manner. If I can talk to these figures today, then I do it also as a representative of all the internal teams who have worked on this. And that, on a sideline, is important to me to mention this because it's much, much more than just a graph on PowerPoint. But apart from this, and coming back to the substance of your question, yes, we have gone quicker than we initially expected. The bigger contribution from life and the ability to release capital from life through dividend payments to the holding has significantly contributed to that, and therefore we are well on track with regard to delivering these 2 billion that we have promised on the investor day. So with regard to Germany and M&A,
yep.
I'll hand over to Gerd.
Thank you, Carsten. In terms of Germany, if you look at the strategy we announced at the Investors Day in October 2016, it was clearly that we are working on shifting the non-life portfolio away from the bigger industrial risks into the more profitable retail and SME business. And that is exactly what we have done. We have also in 2017, as you mentioned, we have cancelled for about 14 million of contracts. And despite this standardization round or this completely re-underwriting round, we have still grown, and that's thanks to the growth, high growth, about 17% in the retail business. The liability portfolio is, of course, a long-tail portfolio. That means that although we have cancelled in 2017 75% of this portfolio, and we will cancel by the end of 2018 the rest, it's still long tail, so it implies some volatility in there. However, as said, we are convinced that we will deliver against what we have promised on the Investors Day, and we will achieve this 96-98 combined ratio range in the midterm. On M&A, maybe two things on M&A. One, we are always, and that always has always been the strategy, we are interested in opportunities that come along in our four countries. And we always actively look at them. two criteria are decisive. One is, of course, the business case, and the other one is the cultural fit with our group. So we continue to look on opportunities that come along. Alternatively, and I think that's also very important to mention, besides the classical M&A transactions, you have the alternative business models in which we are clearly investing with a lot of digital initiatives, collaborations with startups, collaboration with partners, building new ecosystems, Movu, Friday, Mobly. So we have, besides the classical M&A, where we are always interested in, we are heavily investing, and successfully so, in these alternative business models. In terms of the hybrid, I'll hand over to Carsten again.
So your question was around the financing capacity that we have, and I think I can say that we have full financing capacity for financing ideas that might come up, as Gerd said, be it classical M&A or is it adding optionalities for digital investments. We have the full spectrum of financing instruments at our hand, ranging from cash transactions through senior bonds, through hybrid transactions, all the way through equity if required. So financing will not be a boundary for value-generating business ideas.
Thank you very much.
Next question comes from Michael Huttner, JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and I apologize if some of these questions were asked. I came on the call a little bit late. I have four. The first one is the German claims, these liability large claims. Are they in the 2.6% large claims ratio? The second, on the topic of one-offs, should we expect something more? I think I wrote this morning, Germany cleanup. Should we expect something similar for your remaining two small countries, which are Slovakia and Czechia? On the deal capacity, I'm not sure if you answered, but now your solvency is like as strong or even stronger than some of the reinsurers I follow. Can you maybe give a figure of what would be an ideal range or the level of excess capital you regard overall? And then on the my last question is, on the life side, in the past you said that if interest rates rise, you would be able to release some of the reserves which had been put aside for low interest rate risk. And I just wondered if you can discuss that a little bit and also say if such reserve releases would count as cash. Thank you.
So with regard to your first question, those claims that under our definition are large claims, which is claims above 3 million, are taken into consideration in these large claims load that you see on the slide. There have been other claims that are below this threshold and they are not taken out. So it's a question of how you define large claims, which is above 3 million in our case. If you would exclude the effects that Gerd alluded to earlier on the call, then the overall combined ratio of Germany would have been below 100.
I understand, but I was trying to see you show the picture both in country and at group level. And at group level, you show this large claims figure, which doesn't seem to have changed. So my question is really the one-off, I regard it as a one-off, which we're seeing in Germany. Should I also adjust for it in your large claims ratio, which you publish? And I didn't understand your answer, because you said something about 3 million, but I don't know if the claims in Germany were above or below 3 million. I don't have that data.
Yeah. You cannot make this assessment right. And so, but there were claims in these claims that were above 3 million, so they are taken into consideration, and others who have been below. So part of the if you would take the German effect out, would also be reflected then in the large claims load.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Then your question, your second question was
Slovakia and Chechnya.
Yeah, with regard to the one-offs, the one-offs that have taken place in 2017 were one-offs in relation to streamlining the German business and legal entity structure. So it was intended strategic moves by exiting businesses that we wanted to exit, for example, Deutsche Ring Bausparkasse. Mm-hmm. And these deals have been done in 2017, and that created the these one-off effects that are accounting effects and not not cash effects. So in comparison to other things that you alluded to, like Czechia and Slovakia, this is on a much smaller level, and I wouldn't expect similar effects as we've seen with the sell-off of Deutsche Ring Bausparkasse, Roland Rechtsschutz, and others that we've seen in 2017. So the short answer is I wouldn't expect similar one-offs coming from these transactions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then your third question was with regard to deal capacity or financing capacity and excess capital position. I mean, our calibration and the way we use the blue color is that we say that everything that is above 140 is in line with what we consider to be a solid risk buffer on a group level. We already talked about volatility in these numbers, so I'm certainly cautious on it. But with the current structure of the and strength of the balance sheet, I feel comfortable, and I think deal financing shouldn't be an issue from that perspective, because it firstly starts with the attractiveness of the deal, and then financing follows. And on life, with regard to reserve releases in life, I mean, we've seen now a slight pick up in interest rates for the first time since long. So it will take some time until this is all digested, and then at some stage it might reverse or starting to reverse. But I mean, these are not directly cash effects. So with regard to distributing solvency capital, we still need to go back into the fungible perspective on capital, and that brings us back to the cash radar. And once this higher solvency position translates into a stronger balance sheet, and this translates into a higher cash remittance capacity, then the cycle will work. But overall, the environment that we are starting to be in is a good environment for the life business.
And may I just add, you know, you said on the cash flow that the very good number you'd achieved in 2017, the 416 million, partly reflected, it reflected lots of work, and you said thank you, and really well done. Should we or consider some of that to be kind of special work, so that, you know, somebody else earlier said, well, the cash flow, is it going to be J-curved, and at the moment it looks straight line, but maybe did we have a very strong start, and could we have a small dip because some of these one-offs have already been done?
I mean, certainly the remittance in life was strong in 17, but I don't see any reason why this shouldn't be repeatable at the moment.
Lovely. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
The next question comes from Iain Pearce, Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning everyone. Just two quick ones from me. The first one, just on the German claims. I understand that the sort of adverse claims development was in relation to a book of business that had been re-underwritten or was in the process of being re-underwritten, but I was under the impression that this sort of re-underwriting process had largely been completed. So can I just get some clarification on if you still have books of business in Germany that need to be re-underwritten, and if there'll be any impact from that going forwards? And then secondly, just on the SST, will there be any difference, or are you expecting your SST ratio to look any different once you start implementing the standard model for the group life business in Switzerland? Thanks.
Well, let me pick up the question on Germany. I think re-underwriting is, of course, a continuous thing. So we are continuously evaluating our portfolio and re-underwriting and cancelling contracts when we think it's required. Of course, we started when we announced it at the Investor Day in 2016. It was a clear shift away from the industrial risks into the private and the SME business, and we're still doing that. This liability portfolio we've been talking about that has generated, unfortunately, the 2017 bigger claims has been cancelled in the beginning of 2017 for almost 75%, and we will completely go out of this portfolio in 2018. But re-underwriting is, of course, a continuous business, and it never stops.
So the your second question with regard to SST and the effect of moving to standard models. For the time being, we do not see substantial impacts coming from that because these, apart from modeling, the second element of the equation is calibration of these models, and FINMA is actively working on these calibrations of the models as well. And in that context, they also look into the European context. So I wouldn't say that that this will be a big big issue for us. Also, because our starting point is well beyond 200%, but the final outcome is not there yet. But it's not a problem that keeps me awake at night. Honestly, not at all.
Okay, cool. That's great. Thank you.
We have a follow-up question from Mr. Peter Elliott with Kepler. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Sorry, just one sort of final clarification, or maybe two final clarifications on Germany. Are you able to say what the reserve movements were, so what the PYD impact was from Germany? And secondly, I mean, I guess if I look at that 108% combined ratio, I guess there are sort of three impacts in there. Possibly there's the bad weather, there's the runoff portfolio still dragging. And then there's additional large claims adverse experience. Are you able to sort of quantify those all for us? Help think us think about how we slip it out. Thank you very much.
Go ahead, Carsten.
The line was not very good, at least on our end. Could you just repeat the first one? I got that you wanted to have some clarification on reserve movements, but the voice was cut at some stage.
Sorry, the first part was just in terms of what the runoff, what the prior year reserve the PYDs were in respect to Germany.
Okay. I mean, by and large, it was because the claims that occurred have been claims from prior underwriting years. It has an impact or had an impact on the German prior year loss development. I cannot state the figure as of now directly, but it was impacted, of course. So overall, the impact was negative because it was, to some extent, large claims from prior underwriting years. And your second question was with regard to the impact of the three components on the 108 combined ratio. I think we haven't disclosed specific impacts on bad weather runoff and the large other claims. The only thing that I can reiterate is if we would have taken especially the mentioned large claims out of it, that Germany would have been below 100. And that's why we are going forward. We should reiterate our confidence that in the strategic cycle, Germany will be able to deliver 96% to 98% combined ratio.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question comes from René Locher from MainFirst. Please go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. I would like to start just asking on slide 9, the cash radar. So you have now upstreamed 415 million, and you have, that's roughly 860 per share, if I got the right share count, and you have paid out 560 now to shareholders. So there's still 3 Swiss francs per share remaining at the holding level. And I remember that you were kind of guiding that you have an extra dividend cash at the holding level. So I was just wondering if you could give us a number, you know, how much of extra cash you have currently at the holding level. And then just now we have the CIO on the call. I'm still wondering or if he could give us a little bit an idea, you know, if there's something which gives him like sleepless nights. Like when I look at slide 29, so the current yield is at 2.3%, the new and reinvestment yield is 2.1%. So perhaps it's a little bit of a outlook going into 2018-19. Thank you.
So I'll cover the your first question referring to the cash radar on slide 9 and your observation that you've broken down to a per share level. Just as a reminder, the dividend is decided with an up-only perspective, so we move the dividend if we consider it to be a sustainable move. The 415 million that have been remitted to the holding are a gross figure, we have to cover some holding costs from that. We have to also cover the interest rate payments that for the outstanding senior bonds that are on a holding level. Some of the cash remitted on a gross basis serves for serving this. And I think that's the key drivers. If you look at the observation that you've made with regard to how much cash we would like to have in the holding, we guided in the past to one to two dividends that we would like to have as a flexibility buffer in the holding. We already talked about adding optionality through digital initiatives and or M&A. So we want to retain some financing flexibilities, both in terms of volume and timing, and that's how we design it. But I think we are clearly in a blue sky. And at least if I look outside the window here in Basel, this is confirmed by the weather outside. So that's the considerations we have. But your observations with regard to the relation between cash per share and dividend per share are absolutely relevant. Absolutely. For the sleepless nights of the CIO, I'll hand over to Matthias, who is wide awake.
Good, thank you. Looking at page 29, I mean, we were very happy that we could achieve reinvestment yields of 2.1% given the low interest rate environment that we're still in. It's not too far below the 2.3% on the existing book. I think it's been driven to a large extent by our significant real estate investment that we did in last year. If we're looking to 2018, 2019, that number might be a little bit lower. On the other hand, we have higher yield now in the fixed income area. So I would say it gives a balanced picture. So more or less, I wouldn't expect a lot of change going forward.
Okay, thank you.
We had another follow-up question from Mr. Huttner from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Sorry, and thank you very much for this opportunity. So just two very light questions. The first one, I think Peter asked about the difference, I think it was Peter Elliott, the difference between the MCV cash we see and the 138 million that we see in your lovely cash radar. And I said you said you'd deal with it offline. If you could deal with it offline in a way that we can all see, that would be lovely, because it is of interest. And then the other thing is just to check, I think the wording you use for Germany is to say that if you hadn't had large claims, then the combined ratio would have been below 100. So very rough maths, and I know there's reinsurance and stuff. I'm calculating that this would be effectively equivalent to 70 million from large claims. Is that about the right figure? And is a way to think about these large claims that indeed they were mostly reflecting these cancelled portfolios or industrial risks, which you no longer have, rather than being weather, which obviously is a continuing exposure? Thank you.
So your remark with regard to MCV cash and cash on the cash radar, we'll make this in the way you suggested. So we address it before we see each other on the sell-side lunches, or we do it in the context of the sell-side lunches, if that's fine for you.
Thank you.
And Germany?
In Germany, actually, if you look at the large claim situation, so the majority comes from this particular liability portfolio, and we have some additional large claims in car and in accident. So those are the two main sources. But the number that you put forward is indeed, in terms of the range, is correct.
Lovely. Thank you so much. Thank you.
This was the last question for today.
If there are no more questions, then I would like to thank you again for the open discussion. And again, as I said at the very beginning, we are very pleased with the results that we have achieved, and looking forward on continuing on our successful Simply Safe strategy track. Thank you very much, and have a nice day.